Well, firstly, thank you for agreeing to come on the show. It's lovely to have you. For the people who don't know, what is a moon-forming disk?
This is really exciting for me, someone who comes initially from a solar system background. You know, my first passion has always been our own planetary system, and I've branched out into planetary systems around other stars as they've been discovered, because when I was learning about astronomy, we only knew one planetary system. And we have a really clear-cut idea now how planets form around stars. There's still things to work out. There's always another surprise. Every time you make a new discovery, you have another thing to work in. And the current thinking is that planets form around stars in circumstellar disks. You get disks of material around a star as the star is forming. And it's in those disks that planets form, because bits of dust and bits of ice and all the rest of it next to each other in the disk are moving slowly enough relative to their neighbours that when they bounce into each other, they stick rather than smashing. We then have around the biggest planets, the giant planets, in our solar system, collections of satellites, and they've got two different types broadly. You've got the regular satellites and the irregular satellites. And the irregular satellites are a story for another day. We think they're captured, and so they move on very chaotic orbits all over the place. But the regular satellites look very much like planetary systems in miniature. If you think about Jupiter's Galilean moons, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto, they move on circular orbits in the plane of the equator of the planet, and they look very much like the terrestrial planets do, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And so that's long hinted to people that there's probably similarities in how they form. And for many years, people thinking about the solar system have suggested that what happens is when you form a giant planet, they carve a hole out of the disk around the star, because once they get massive enough, they get to 10 times the mass of the Earth, roughly. They can start sucking up all the gas. They suck up all the hydrogen and helium, which is the majority of what's out there, up until the point they've opened a hole in the disk and they've essentially eaten everything they can. And from that point on, as they grow very slowly, they just feed from the two edges of that gap. And material comes in and spirals into them and forms a disk around them. So you get a circumplanetary disk around this planet that's forming, where this planet is feeding from the edges of a gap it's cleared in the disk. And that circumplanetary disk is made of everything that flows into the gap and into it from the wider disk around the star. And that circumplanetary disk, therefore, has lots of dust and ice in it. And it's quite dense as an environment, which means that you can form within that objects that are growing as though the planets were growing, that become the moons of those giant planets. And the idea is that you might get multiple generations of moons that form, migrate inwards through the disk, and then are devoured by the planet. So it's kind of, instead of supping a nice fluid flowing in like drinking from the tap of a beer pump, instead you've got this kind of lumpy fluid that you're chewing on, more like a bubble tea, essentially. You've got lumpy bits coming in occasionally. And then eventually the disk gets cleared away and the last generation of moons survive to be visible. So in that context, a circumplanetary disk where moons are forming is what we'd expect based on we know about our own solar system. But historically, we can see where planets are forming around stars, but we can't zoom in well enough to see them yet. That's the long history. What's happened now is that our technology is getting better and better. It's getting really awesome. And that means we can zoom in further and further and get better resolution images. And that's where this data has come in. So this is taken by the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, which looks at objects using infrared light, essentially. So light that is longer in wavelength than that we'll see with the naked eye. It's the kind of thing that a heat-sensitive camera would use when you see the spy dramas and they're looking at where people are by their body heat. The same kind of idea. And the beauty of that array is it's a lot of telescopes spread out that pretend to be one really big telescope. And that means you can zoom in a lot and get really high-quality images. And they've looked at this one baby star, which we knew had a disk of material around it, which should be forming planets. But they've got high enough resolution that they could see a gap in that disk. And we've seen this a few times. And that gap is telltale. It's exactly what we'd expect if you're forming a planet like Jupiter. And it's nommed all the gas, opened up a gap. So that's kind of what we expect. What's new about this discovery is in that gap, there is a blob, exactly where you'd expect a planet to be forming. And it's that blob we think is a circumplanetary disk, which is a moon-forming disk. So it's for the very first time we get evidence of the narrative, the fairy tale, the story I told you before, actually happening in real time. We can see a planet feeding from the edges of its disk, forming a disk around itself. And within that disk, you can be forming moons like the moons of Jupiter, one of which is bigger in size, albeit nowhere near bigger in mass, than Mercury. Ganymede, the biggest moon in the solar system, is bigger than one of the planets in the solar system, albeit made of ice rather than metal, so it's not as heavy. And so we can see this happening real time, and that's just mind-bogglingly awesome.
And so what kind of stuff can we learn from observing this planetary disk, moon-forming disk, yeah?
Well, it's the first one we've seen. So initially, it supports the hypothesis we have. The hypothesis we have about how the moons form would make a prediction. It would say that when you get good enough telescopes, when you can see giant planets forming, you should see these kind of disks. So it's fabulously gratifying for the theorists out there who have said, we think we understand how moons form, because it supports that. What we'll get going forward as more and more of these are found is that they give you a ground truth on how that works. And they also show you the diversity of outcomes that you can get from the planet formation and the moon formation process. And with exoplanets, before we found any of them, before we found the first planet around another star, we expected every planetary system to look like our own. So rocky planets close in, giant planets further out. Then we started finding those planets around other stars, and we realized that actually things are much more complex, there's much more diversity. And we are one outcome of a possible route of planet formation, but there are many other outcomes possible. In this case, people are really interested in moons of planets around other stars because, if nothing else, they're extra places we can look for life elsewhere. You have these beautiful speculations based on the fact that, well, the planets we find around other stars include planets that are much more massive than Jupiter. If you have a planet more massive than Jupiter, then perhaps that planet's moons would be more massive than Jupiter's moons. So what if you had a planet that was so big that it could have a moon as massive as the Earth? What would it like to be on that moon? If that moon was at the right distance from the star, could it have life on it? And at the minute, all we have is one planetary system in the form of our own, with one set of moons in the form of the moons in the solar system. As we start to explore moons forming around planets around other stars, we'll get a much better feel for the diversity of moons you get in different planetary systems that have different initial conditions that form fundamentally different kinds of planets, which is exciting in and of itself. But the most exciting bit for me is we'll learn whether it's possible to form moons that are truly planetary in nature, rather than being icy fluff balls, essentially like the moons of Jupiter. Imagine we find a planet three times Jupiter's mass, say, bigger than our Jupiter, a big brute of a planet, and it has a moon going around it that is the size and mass of the Earth. That'd be fascinating. Suddenly all those sci-fi scenarios become made real. And we can imagine really good environments to study, to learn more about the possibility of life elsewhere and to learn about our place in the cosmos, not just about how planets form, even though finding out how planets form is cool in and of itself.
So how, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, looking for life on exoplanets, but how likely are we to find, you know, habitable worlds around, as moons around planets, as you were saying?
This is one of those questions that's really engaging scientists hugely at the minute. I can't give you a definite answer because we haven't found any yet. So it's one of those things of, we can speculate, we can work on the best evidence we have currently, which are the models we've got, and it depends who you trust with that. The reality is, until we actually find what the diversity of moons is, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I think it's certainly reasonable that you could find moons that are potentially habitable. And I can say that with some confidence because we have them in our solar system. We've got a number of moons in the outer solar system which have liquid water inside them, not on the surface, but inside them. And we've only learned that over the last 20, 30 years by visiting those planets. The problems with the moons in the outer solar system is that they are potentially habitable. They've got all the conditions you need for life to thrive on Earth. And if it thrives here, it could thrive there. But they're not detectably habitable in that between us and that water, there is, even in the best case scenario, 10 kilometers thickness of ice as an ice sheet blocking that ocean from our view. In the case of some of the other moons, you're talking hundreds of kilometers of ice and rock. And so even if there's life there, we couldn't detect that life even in our own solar system at the minute, but certainly if that moon was around a planet around another star, way beyond our capability. So what we tend to think of when we're talking about habitable planets and looking for life is actually a smaller subset of all of the possible places life could exist, which is those places where life could exist and we could detect it. And that's where we think about planets more like the Earth, in that the life is on the surface, able to modify the atmosphere, and we could detect the signal in the atmosphere. And I always think that's a really important point that people don't talk about enough, which is we can imagine places where life could thrive that we will never be able to detect, or where we can't detect it using even near-future technology. And we'll find places like that, but they're not the most exciting, because even if life could be there, we are unlikely to find it. The focus is much more on Earth-like planets, and that often gets portrayed as being the only place you could have life is Earth-like planets, and that doesn't fit with current understanding, but it's often a miscommunication that's born out of not talking about things deeply enough. So what I'd be really interested in following all that is finding a moon around a planet like this that formed in one of these disks, where that moon is massive enough to hold onto a substantial atmosphere. So what that means is that on the surface of that moon, you could have the environments you need for life interacting with an atmosphere we could measure. Whereas Europa at Jupiter, for example, you've got a subsurface ocean with volcanoes, all the requirements you need for life, and then a 10-kilometer thick ice sheet blocking our view. And so for me, the really exciting thing is down the line, if we find that moons much more substantial than the moons of Jupiter are possible, forming in these disks, they suddenly become a really good place to look because it's a different environment. They're probably more volcanically active, as we see with the moons of Jupiter, because the giant planet's gravity tugs and squeezes on them, heating them up. That could mean that they're habitable further from the star than they otherwise would be. It could mean that that activity means there's more availability for nutrients for life, all sorts of things, but we haven't found them yet. So it's all down to that exploration, of which this is one of the first steps, and it's a really exciting one, but it's a step on that journey rather than the final destination.
Yeah, I think this is a really exciting time. You know, I feel like we're sort of on the precipice of something really, really interesting being discovered. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you giving the time, and hopefully I'll have a chat with you soon.
That's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.